Welcome to our January What's Next support call. I'm Kristen Ulmer. I want to welcome a lot of new guests to our group this week, this month, because we actually started telling people about this versus keeping it our little secret. Now, these calls are called the What's Next calls because they're for people already familiar with my work. And a lot of my work, certainly these days, is focused on fear and anxiety and other emotional flow. But keep in mind, no subject is off limits. And you're requested, if you want, every month to submit questions to me. And of course, somebody did submit some questions, but only one person. So don't be shy. Always submit questions if you have something that you want to be discussed during the calls. Now, there are different levels of familiarity with my work. And if you feel a bit lost as we proceed during this call, there are two things that you can do to bring yourself up to speed so that you don't feel a little confused. First of all, read my book, The Art of Fear, and you can find it on Amazon or anywhere that books are sold online. And my message about fear is very different for those of you that are new or not as familiar as with my work as some of the others here, which is I don't teach about fear as being a problem to be solved, but a resource to be tapped into. Or at least something that it's very important to learn how to be in flow with instead of trying to fight it or conquer, overcome it, or rationalize it away, or control it, or let it go, or all the other things that we're taught to do about fear. I say, don't do that. You know, it's a bad idea. Instead, what we want to do is have intimacy with our fear. And then the other thing that I'm really big on these days is a subject that a lot of my subscribers have been hearing me talk about, certainly in the last probably 4 months, is core values. And Amy will post a podcast about core values after this call is through. And when I say core values, I mean, this is a different conversation about core values. I'm actually writing a book about this with my partner in this subject, which is Donnie Angel. And the podcast will be something that she gave. When I say core values, I mean namely the three primary core values that you are born with that make up basically everything, your whole world. It's like your reason for being. It's like you live to have your core values be expressed and met. So it's very important. I'm not going to talk about core values. It may come up this month because a lot of you are not up to speed on that. But hopefully by next month, you do a little bit of homework and get up to speed on that. So look for that, the things that Amy is going to post. There's also going to be a worksheet on core values posted that Amy will put up so that you can figure out what your top three core values, and this is definitely going to be your homework, the core value homework. And I think that you're going to find this really, really fascinating to learn about yourself. So hopefully you're excited about homework versus not excited about it like you were in high school. All right. So tonight's call starts with, let's discuss what I mean by fear. So we're going to go back kind of to the roots of this. And then we're going to get to the three questions that were submitted that I'm going to help answer that I think is going to be relevant, that these questions are going to be relevant for all of us. So what do we mean when we're talking about fear, certainly in these calls? And when you think of fear, you think, oh, snakes, you know, like, of course, when you see a snake and it falls out of the tree and lands on your head, you know, you're gonna feel fear, or you get mugged, you know, you're gonna feel fear, or if somebody else surprise party, you know, it stops your heart, and that's obvious fear. Less obvious fear is like, for example, when you're about to give a speech, you just feel, I mean, you call it nervous. You know, or maybe you're about to take a test and you're slightly underprepared, or you're about to go on your first date in a year, you know, you feel nervous. And it's less obvious in those moments that that's what fear is. You know, in this point, in this case, it's showing up as nervousness. Or maybe your mom, who's worrying about, you know, when you're a kid, or maybe you are a mom now worrying about your kids. We don't think of that as fear. We think about that as concern or worry. So there are less obvious versions of fear. And the word anxious, we want to talk about that when we're talking about fear, because that's what everybody is saying. You know, nobody says that they're feeling fear anymore. They say they're feeling anxious. And there are a million things that make us anxious right now. And this has become the new word, drum roll please, for fear. And I mean, people say all the time to me, like, oh no, wait, no, I'm not afraid. I don't feel fear. I'm just anxious. I've had so many people say this to me. I see this online that people say this. They're like, oh, I don't have any fear. I'm fearless, but I have an anxiety disorder, or I can't sleep. I have insomnia, or, you know, I have an anger issue. You know, it's all pretty much saying the same thing though. And look at it this way, because we're describing what fear is. Fear is the noun. It's the thing. It's the emotion. Scared, and I talked about this, I think last call or the call before. Scared is the adjective. It's the description of the fear, okay? It's like, I'm feeling fear and it's showing up as I'm feeling scared. Or anxious is the adjective, which is the description of the fear that you're feeling. So if you feel fear, you might say you're feeling scared. Or if you feel fear, you might say you're worried or you're nervous. But it's very rare anymore that somebody actually says, I feel fear. We say all these other things instead. And the reason why we don't do that is because fear is like this taboo. It's like normal to be worried. It's normal to be nervous. It's normal to be anxious. But, oh, it's, you know, you have fear? What's wrong with you? So these are just reframes, you know, for the word fear. But because fear is what leads to all of these. You know, beneath all of these adjectives is the sensation of fear. And throughout all of it, it remains the same thing. And I briefly touched upon that it can show up as anger too. A lot of people that don't want to deal with fear, I talk about this all the time, you know, well, I don't feel fear, I'm just angry. You know, like the classic example I always use is of the kid that has a lot of fear in his life at home or at school, he's maybe getting teased. And next thing you know, he doesn't want to feel fear. He certainly doesn't want to admit to feeling fear, because it feels powerless. So he feels anger instead, which is fear's fight version. But it remains the same thing. In fact, there are some emotional specialists that suggest that there isn't even such a thing as an emotion called fear, or sorry, as an emotion called anger. It's just fear's fight response. So basically saying that anger is fear. So it can also, fear can show up as jealousy. It can show up as blame. It can show up as irritation. I think the weirdest one is if you have physical pain, your undealt with fear will make that physical pain worse. We know that that's the case in like your lower back, for example, or your shoulders. Like if you have physical pain from an old injury too, I see this with women that get a lot of UTIs, or, you know, like that maybe they're abused or raped or something like that. They have medical issues or even physical pain that is basically their fear that's undealt with, that's still stuck in their body, that is making the physical pain worse. So, I mean, when we're talking about fear, it sounds like I'm making it complicated, but what I'm trying to do is actually make it more simple. And I want you to look at it this way. Fear is the emotion behind any discomfort. And that it is something, and this is a really, really big point, and the reason why we're talking about it and why I talk about it so much and why we're all here is because the fear is just always there. It's always there. Doesn't matter what you're doing. Doesn't matter if there's a snake dropping on your head, or if you're being teased at school, or if you're a kid, or, you know, if you have kids or not. It's always there. Why? Well, because we have this amygdala, you know, the two almond-shaped nuggets at the top of the spine, and all sensory data is run through this filter, and it's the manufacturing plant for fear. And if there's a threat, it'll manufacture fear and send it into your body. It's proven by science to be in your body, and it's supposed to flow through your body like water through a hose. Most of you have heard me say this. Now, most of us are in denial of it. You know, when I say that fear is with us pretty much every single moment of every single day in every single interaction we have, we don't want to believe that. Like, no, that can't be true. You know, oh, we're all about love, right? Like, that's one more way for us to be in denial of it. And most of us want to stay in denial of it. Or if we're not in denial of it, you know, if it's like, oh no, it's there, right? And I feel it there, it's there. We work really hard to fight it, and we're taught to fight it, thus all the language. But on this call, the folks who are here, we know better. On these calls, instead of trying to fight it or be in denial of it, the reason why we're here is because we are committed to being aware of it. That's the first part. We're committed to recognizing the pitfalls of ignoring it or being in resistance to it, and resistance comes in many forms. And the third thing is that we want to work towards having an honest, healthy, flowing relationship with our fear as a way to live our most present, real, honest, and fulfilling lives. I mean, if you're living in a house with a snake, you know, the amount of effort spent to ignore the snake or fight it or understand the snake and why it's here as a way to control it. And, you know, it's just a lot of effort. Like, you could ever understand a snake or control it or try to figure out why it acts the way it acts. It's just the snake. The snake's just being the snake, right? I mean, it's a lot of effort. And much easier and a lot more effective and a lot healthier is to make friends with the snake that lives in your house. And once you do this, you actually see that he's kind of wonderful. So that's my description of fear. Does anybody have any questions?
I just had someone comment on this in chat, but is panic just an extreme version of fear?
Well, it depends on what we're talking about. You know, there's panic that is justifiable, like, oh my gosh, the house is on fire, where's my cat? That's my version of panic, right? I don't have kids. That seems justifiable fear. But if people are living in a state of panic, you know, definitely something's gone wrong. That's kind of, if it's showing up as something that's bigger or out of proportion to the situation at hand, then that's a different conversation. But yes, panic is another name for fear. Or it's a very high level, kind of high cortisol, norepinephrine, adrenaline version of fear. One of them.
Okay, I had got evicted and lost my job yesterday, and I wasn't able to do yoga or have any time to deal with those things. So I went into a bad way of dealing it, which was just sipping wine to anesthetize myself. But I felt just this intense, just overwhelm. And actually it's okay now. I fixed it, but until I fixed it, it was very, I don't know if that's just like extreme stress as opposed to fear.
Well, it depends on what you're fixing. Like, what is the it that you're fixing? You know, fear is not something to be fixed. The situation is what the fear is here to help you fix, though. The situation is that you lost your job. And that's the it that hopefully you're fixing. And the fear is here to make you more sharp and focused in order to fix it. And so the conversation in these calls is not about fixing fear or fixing the snake. Like, if you say, oh, there's the snake, what do you mean fix it? Well, we tend to think, oh, we got to get rid of it. But that's disrespectful to the snake. You know, oh, I don't want the snake though. I want to live with a bunny. Let's fix it. Let's turn it into a bunny, right? That's not fair to the snake. You know, it's disrespectful to the snake too. So just when you say the word, I want to fix it, what do you mean?
I've solved those two things. So I got my job and got to stay where I want to live, but I didn't sleep, and I was just obsessed until I came up with a solution and wasn't able to do just meditate and yoga and stuff I would normally do because I was just in a high state of reaction to what it just kind of almost like shock.
Right. And so there's the problem that is like, oh my gosh, I lost my job. And then the fear shows up. And then for many people, they start to feel like the fear is the bigger problem than having lost the job. But actually, the fear is the solution. The fear is here to make you sharp and focused and come up with a solution. And you better do it quick. And, you know, the fear is like here to keep you up all night to make sure you figure this out, right? Because, oh my gosh, the rent's due, you know? And So this is about a big reframe about how you see fear. That's what these calls in no small part are.
Okay.
Awesome. Any other questions before we move on to the questions that were submitted?
Somebody asked in the thread, is dread essentially fear projected into the future?
Yes. I would say so. Like fear is the noun and dread is the adjective. And fear is going to manifest in different ways for different people. Until we can go back to the roots of what we're dealing with, it'll show up as all these things. And so this call today is about simplifying it and just bringing us home to what it really is so that it doesn't wind up projecting into the future or showing up in an exaggerated way that is out of proportion to your life situation or that seems unreasonable. You know, like dread about the future. I mean, I mean, there's some things to dread, but if the dread feels like kind of ridiculous and irrational, then it's a good thing you're on this call. All right, shall we move on? So let me read these questions. The first question that was submitted, there are some situations that trigger some uncomfortable feelings in me, but when the situation passes, the feeling passes also. We just kind of talked about that. So this is a very appropriate question. Here's the question though, that actually was being asked. Is there a way to trigger the same feelings when you are alone in your home and deal with them in the comfort of your home? So that you're not having to deal with this when you're out in public. So he is asking about, and the person that submitted these questions has been a client of mine for a little bit. He is asking about my 4-step art of fear method, which is what we're going to go over in this call soon. So yes, there is a way to deal with them in the comfort of your own home, but you don't have to necessarily wait till you get home. Like I do the 4-step art of fear method or some variation of it. I've sometimes done it while I'm on stage, mid-sentence during a keynote. So you can still do this when you're out in the world. You don't need to go home in order to deal with it. But you should practice it at home before you try to deploy it while you're on stage. All right, so here's the next question. I'm going to answer these throughout the rest of our time together. Question number 2, when I have very little or no sleep at all, I feel more stressed and more reactive. Is it because the lack of sleep makes you more stressed? I think he's saying maybe is the lack of sleep making you more emotional? Or is it because you can no longer control your emotions that have been suppressed and they now start coming out? Well, I would say both. But the thing is, knowing this doesn't matter or change anything. Like knowing which one or the other, even trying to figure it out, because sometimes it could be one or sometimes it could be the other. Knowing this, the answer to the question doesn't change anything, because the bottom line is when you don't sleep, you can become emotional. You know, let's make it really simple. When you don't sleep, you become emotional. And for some, emotional means uncomfortable. And when we're uncomfortable and we don't know how to deal with being uncomfortable, sometimes we turn into assholes, right? And I think that's why this question was being asked, is that, well, we want a solution. When we're tired, we turn and we start to feel uncomfortable. We're not able to deal with our emotions. Some of us turn into assholes. And I think the question is being asked because we want a solution, right? And we think by understanding which is it, right, leads to a solution. I think the only thing that's worth understanding when it comes to emotions is usually when we try to understand them, we're doing this as a way to control them. So I feel like this question is like a secretly disguised attempt to understand something as a way to control the emotions. Like, okay, when I'm tired, I don't want to make an ass of myself, or I don't want to feel uncomfortable. But understanding or controlling your emotions doesn't help you accomplish this. It doesn't help you feel better. It doesn't help make you less of an ass. And I would say though, if we need to understand one thing, understand this, that if you don't sleep and if you get emotional because you're or stressed or whatever, or start to lash out, simplify things. And let's learn how to not control your emotions in those moments, because there's no integrity in that. We'll talk about integrity more in towards the end of our talk tonight. You want to learn how to be in flow with them. That's when it really, really shows whether you're in flow with your emotions or not. So that even when your world is collapsing because of lack of sleep or because of any other thing, you can still operate out of integrity. And definitely remember that word, integrity. And when I say integrity, I mean integrity with your emotions, which is very different from controlling them. Having integrity with one's emotions is very different from controlling them. Remember that, and more on this soon. The third question is, when I have only limited time to sleep, sometimes I don't fall asleep at all. I feel stressed that I need to fall asleep quick and keep stressing that I should have already fallen asleep and I won't get enough sleep. I have this urge that I need to do something to fall asleep quickly and I won't let myself naturally fall asleep. Oh my gosh. So more on sleep. We have all been there. Oh my gosh. And two questions about lack of sleep. You know, there's a theme here, right? The first question is about dealing with your emotions in the privacy of your own home. And of course, when you're asleep, you're in the privacy, or trying to sleep, you're in the privacy of your own home. So they're kind of both tied together. And it all brings us to the art of fear method, which is something that I came up with after The Art of Fear came out. I was married at the time, and my husband says, you got to make this practical. You got to come up with some sort of thing that people can do, like a step-by-step process so they can get back in flow with their emotions rather than just understand something intellectually. And so that's what the Art of Fear method is. So some of you know about the 4-step Art of Fear method, and this will be a remember to remember call. Others don't know about it, and you're about to learn this method that I came up with. I have been using the 4-step Art of Fear method to not only help myself go through a tremendously painful divorce and also deal with some sleep issues that I had, certainly from the divorce and also from menopause. I've used this to help clients with any number of problems, athletes, you name it. So I'm going to go over the 4-step Art of Fear method first intellectually, and then I'm going to give you an example of two times that I used it in my life. One regarding falling back to sleep, because that's what our questions are about, you know, so we can answer these sleep questions. And so that we can all, you know, instead of just, well, let's just all learn how to sleep better. This is going to help you sleep better, right? And then I'm going to ask for, drum roll please, 2 volunteers so I can facilitate it with you. And Amy will pick them. So, you know, plead your case in the chat box and she will figure out who is going to be in the hot seat, I call it, soon. So now, before we get started explaining this and going through the process, I want you to have 3 major perspective shifts that you really incorporate into your language and into your bone marrow on fear. So the first perspective shift is certainly, but also if people whom you love have anxiety problems, or are they overly worry, or they have dread all the time, or they have irrational fears, or some sort of emotional trouble, or even disorder. We have been calling these mental illnesses, like we call anxiety and an anxiety disorder mental illness for years. The perspective shift that I want us to always keep in mind is that this is not a mental illness. These are emotional illnesses. Same with PTSD. It's not a mental illness. Depression is not a mental illness. These are emotional illnesses. And notice by making that perspective shift, we are no longer thinking that the problem is up here. We think that the problem is down here. It's like the problem is and the way that we deal with our emotions, that there's nothing wrong with our brains. So that, just notice how much that changes your perspective. The second perspective shift is that I've talked about this, that most people call fear anxiety these days. And I want us to shift back into calling it fear. And it's very, very important that we do this, because this makes us more honest, real, and raw with ourselves about what it is that we're dealing with. Like a kind of a funny example of this is like Jell-O, you know? Like, okay, Jell-O is gelatin and sugar, and where does gelatin come from? Horses' hooves. Does that mean that Jell-O is made out of horses' hooves? Not necessarily, but I mean, if we want to call it by a word that is more socially acceptable, fine, but it's gelatin, right? Or we could even go so far as to call it horses' hooves, right? But it's just makes us more honest, real, and raw about what it is that we're eating, for example. So that's kind of a fun example. The third perspective shift is that I want you guys to monitor your expectations. I know a lot of you signed up for these monthly calls because of some of the questions or regarding fear and anxiety. And so that's why I'm just going all in on this first call for our new guests. But the third perspective shift is that it's time to really, really get once and for all that fear cannot be gotten rid of. You're never going to be able to get rid of fear. The four-step art of fear method will not be able to help you get rid of fear. It's never going to happen. Instead, what we're going for is natural levels of fear according to your life situation. Now, whether you on this call have already natural levels of fear in your life, otherwise known as anxiety, but we're not going to call it that anymore, or whether you have excessive or like some version of fear, even as an adjective, is causing problems for you in your life, the art of fear method is worth doing no matter what. And the reason why is, here's the Zen story. There was a samurai who lived in the south of Japan. And he wanted to learn from this great Zen master that lived in the north of Japan. And the Zen master was just said to be so smart. And samurai wanted to learn about heaven and hell. So he made it such a holy pilgrimage that he got rid of all his earthly possessions except for his loincloth, his samurai sword, and his begging bowl. And he spent 6 months walking north, and he only ate what he begged for. And he slept in the dirt, and you know, he just didn't eat very much. He got very skinny. He was dirty by the time he got there, but it was such a holy quest that this is what he did. And he got finally in front of the Zen master after 6 months and said, "Ah, oh, I've come such a long way. Can you teach me about heaven and hell?" And the Zen master looked at him and said, "Absolutely not. Look at you. You're filthy. You're disgusting. You're beneath me. I won't teach you anything." And with that, the samurai, his great samurai, he was furious, and he pulled out his sword and he was about to cut the head off of the Zen master. And the Zen master said, "That is hell." And the samurai stops, and the sword drops out of his hand and falls to the ground. And he falls to the ground with it, and he gets on his knees and he starts bowing to the Zen master and worshiping him. And the Zen master said, "That is heaven." So why are we doing this practice? Because we're living in hell if we're trying to cut the head off of our fear, off of our teacher, off of our snake, off of our whatever, off of life itself. But if we're bowing to it, then we're living in heaven. So I'm going to give you a chance for questions soon. I'm going to go over the four-step art of fear method now, intellectually. The art of fear method comes in four steps. And the first step is, and let me actually back up and say that the time that you do this is when you're having issues, emotional issues, or even emotional disorders, like then you should do it a lot. Or if you're just feeling uncomfortable, if you're feeling pain, if you're feeling hot, if you're feeling cold, if you have monkey mind, if you have any kind of problem or discomfort in your life, that's when you practice the four-step art of fear method. It lasts maybe 2 minutes. I can do it in like, you know, a quarter of a second now at this point, because I've done it so much. So the first step, though, if you want to get into it and practice it, is you say to yourself, and this is the first intellectual and the only intellectual understanding that you have in the four steps. It's mostly a physical experience, but in step one, intellectually, you understand that it's normal and natural to feel, we'll just call it fear, fear or discomfort. It's a part of life. It's not a sign of personal weakness. It's not a character flaw. You are supposed to be feeling this. The second step is where you leave the mind behind and you just go into the body. And here's where you really are going to learn what kind of relationship you have with your body. You locate where the discomfort is. Where is it? How strong is it? What is it? You know, what does it look like? Give it the adjective or the name. The third step is then you notice, what is my relationship with that discomfort? So those of you that have read my book, I have an equation in there. Suffering equals discomfort times resistance. Step two, we identify this discomfort. Where is it? What is it? How strong is it? Step three, we identify the resistance. And so the resistance is actually something that gets taught. It's not normal and natural. It is a little bit, you know, you resist the hot stove. But we've been resisting our unpleasant emotions or our discomfort for so long. Like, what kind of particular type of resistance do you have? You know, notice how strong it is as well. Maybe give it a 1 to 10 as well. And if the resistance is stronger than the discomfort itself, which it almost always is, actually, I think it always is when I first start working with a client who has an emotional problem, the discomfort is actually not as strong or not as uncomfortable as the resistance to the discomfort. We then spend some time feeling our resistance, honoring our resistance, bowing to our resistance. We don't want to then resist the resistance or try to get rid of it. And then once it dissipates, because it gets your undivided attention, then step four of the Art of Fear method is to now spend some time just feeling into the discomfort itself. So that's an intellectual understanding of what the four-step Art of Fear method looks like. Let me give you two examples of me using this. Once I was about to give a speech, and it was to a sold-out audience. I was on a plane, and there was going to be like 200 people there. I was feeling really nervous. And you know, you can do this right before you go on stage. I did this actually on the plane flying there because I was feeling really, really nervous. And I just acknowledged that it's normal and natural for me to feel fear. I'm about to give a speech. Of course I feel fear. It's a scary thing to do. You know, I care about what people think of me and I don't want to make a fool of myself. I've made a fool of myself before. Like, of course I'm scared, right? That's step one. Step two, I closed my eyes and I noticed that I felt nervous and it was in my chest. And it was about a level 9. You know, suffering equals discomfort times resistance. That's the discomfort part of the equation. Step three, okay, am I in resistance to this feeling? And for me, I typically, my form of resistance is I ignore it. I have a long history of ignoring my fear. And I was ignoring it. I had all these other things. I was distracting myself, being super busy. And now I couldn't ignore it anymore. I was on the plane, and my resistance was a level 10. I'm like, for crying out loud, I wrote the book about this. It's still there. So I first just felt my resistance because the resistance was higher than the discomfort itself. And my resistance was showing up as, I don't want to do this. I'm tired. I just want to go home. I don't want to have to be on stage later. And so I just felt that. And I just kept saying over and over in my mind, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. I'm tired. I don't want to do this. And I just said it over and over again. I just let that voice, that part of me, have its time. You know, I just let it, you know, I bowed to it. I let it, my version of it is I just let it speak. For other people, you might have to be more proactive, give it a hug, put it on stage. Bow to it is a really good practice. I just felt it. I just felt into the feeling of, I don't want to do this. I'm tired. I just allowed myself to feel tired. And about a minute later, after getting my undivided attention, it started to dissipate, went down to maybe a level 1. And then step 4, I then just felt my fear, my nervousness. And it was in my chest. And again, with my eyes closed, I just felt it and had intimacy with it. And a lot of people get confused about the word intimacy. Intimacy, I just gave a speech to a bunch of teenagers and they were really confused. And I said, well, because I assume I'm talking about sex, right? And I said, well, has anybody ever had an intimate experience with a dog before? And they all raised their hands. I'm like, well, was it sexual? And they're like, no, right? So you can have intimacy with anything and it's not sexual. It's just like I am it and it is me. And that's what it feels like. And it's beautiful self-love practice. And then it went down to a level one. And then I was fine. And I went and gave a great speech. The last example I'll give is this morning, I couldn't sleep at like 5 a.m. And because the questions are about sleep, how could I not use this? I probably do this technique 4 or 5 times a week and I fall right back to sleep. I first find the part of me that is tired, and then I find the part of me that is comfortable. And then I identify like, what is keeping me awake? And it's usually one of two things. It's either my fear, in which case I haven't been dealing with it, right, during the day, and it's now waking me up in the middle of the night. Or it's my mind just going batshit crazy, which is what I found out it was this morning. And the reason why your fear is keeping you up in the middle of the night is probably because of something you did. Probably you've been ignoring your fear and it will not be ignored and it'll wait until your guard is dropped in the middle of the night to wake you up and keep you up. And if you try to get rid of it or shut it up or distract yourself or whatever, it's just going to persist and it's not going to work. If it's your mind, you know, I watched a stimulating movie right before I went to bed last night. And so, of course, my mind was like, so just freaking out in the, you know, 5 a.m. And so then I just notice what it is that's keeping me awake. And I just let it do its thing. And it happens every time I wake up 2 hours later. And it's like I'm asleep in 2 seconds. And I don't even know that it's happening. So that's how I used a modified version of the Art of Fear method to fall back asleep. So basically, if you are awake in the middle of the night, something is trying to get your attention, well, give it to them. Stop trying to distract yourself from the thing that's screaming at you and trying to get your attention. If it's your mind, give it attention. If it's your fear, give it attention. You know, if you have a bull, give it a wide pasture, let it do its thing. Right? If you have an upset child that's screaming, you know, give it a hug or let it speak. It's the same thing with your whatever that's keeping you up. Do this. Try it out. Let me know how it goes. It has been life-changing for me. Now, how this affects my life, you know, when I'm tired and I can't sleep, I use this all the time and I fall right asleep. It also helped me through my very painful divorce that I'm just through the other side of. Less than 2 weeks ago. It also helps me during stressful times. I think this is why those questions were phrased the way they were, you know, like, how do I handle not being able to sleep? How do I handle stress? How do I, you know, when do I do this? Like, hopefully I've answered those questions. You know, I was able to work through my divorce so fast because of the 4-step Art of Fear method and actually sleep kind of well during it, even when going through menopause. And then this is the last thing I'll say, back to the conversation about integrity. You know, you want to have integrity with your emotions. And then I'm opening the floor to you for 2 volunteers and also questions. But integrity is whatever you're feeling plus grace. I love equations. Really let that sink in. There's no integrity in, you know, something's keeping you up in the middle of the night. It might be your fear. I'm trying to get rid of it. There's no integrity with that. There is integrity, however, turning towards the thing that's keeping you awake and just having a precious moment with it. And there is integrity if you're upset. Like the one thing that I'm really proud of is how I handled the divorce with my husband, who was just acting like such an ass and just so mean and cruel and just like out of nowhere, like where's this, like I handled it with a lot of integrity, not just with him well, with him, because I was having a lot of integrity within my own emotional experience, which goes back to the first question that was asked for this month's call. You know, whatever you're feeling, if you're feeling agitated, if you're feeling angry, if you're feeling sad, if you're feeling like you want to punch somebody, if you're feeling like, you know, like you want to, you're just so confused. And, you know, if you can just spend some time allowing yourself to feel that, you know, and having some, and having some, using it as a way to connect with yourself. You connect with your feelings, you connect with yourself. If you love whatever it is that you're feeling, it's a self-love practice. That's what this four-step Art of Fear method is all about. You know, then you will have grace. And the bonus is you will stay in your own lane. You'll realize that these are my emotions and you'll know how to deal with them now. And you'll have a lot of grace in the process. Any questions before we go to our volunteers?
There were a couple questions from the chat, and you're welcome to ask your questions out loud, but I'll start with one asking, can we talk about the connection of the thinking mind and fear? And you have touched on this. You address it in your book. However, my default is always to think out solutions to my problems instead of letting the fear talk. I feel like my mind is always trying to think a way out. Can you speak to this?
Well, we want to treat the thinking mind like we treat fear, with dignity and respect. And so for some people, it's like, oh, no, fear's not my issue. You know, my thinking mind's the issue, or just my mind. It's just is always racing. Well, then, I mean, I could literally write the same book and replace the word fear with our minds and say the same thing. And if you have a bull, you want to give it a big pasture. If you have a wild horse, you know, if you try to contain it, it's just going to get more and more agitated and upset. And so the practice is, and the four-step Art of Fear method is the practice to allow whatever it is that's driving you nuts to have its stage or have its wide pasture or have its moment to do its thing while you're doing nothing but bowing to it, like the samurai. And I promise you, it calms right down every time. And whoever submitted that question, maybe you might want to be one of my volunteers. And we could do this with the mind. We don't just have to do this with fear. We can do this with the mind. Like, I mean, that's what was keeping me up at 5 a.m. this morning. Fear wasn't keeping me up. It was my mind. I have a good relationship with fear now, so it's very rare that fear wakes me up in the middle of the night, unless I have something I'm really scared about. But then it's in proportion to my life situation. Always, it's my mind that's keeping me up. And I do the four steps or the modified version of four steps for sleep, and it calms right down. And oh, let me go to the first part of that question too. The relationship between mind and fear, sometimes the two can be tied together. Like sometimes your mind may be going berserk with fearful thoughts because the hose is kinked, your fear is stuck in your system. And like water tends to do in a trapped, closed system, it will then flood into any available space. And so your fear may have flooded into your mind at this point. And if you're living in your mind, oftentimes the fear will travel to the place, whatever place it is, that it needs to in order to get your attention. You know, and it could be into, you know, your old broken leg or your compromised spine and your lower back, but it could also be your mind. Like whatever part of you that most captures your attention, the fear will travel to and live in that place and turn up the dial if you've been repressing it or ignoring it or blocking it out or kinking the hose in any way. So that's the correlation between, you know, monkey mind or fearful mind and fear. Any other questions before we go to the volunteers?
I think that's a popular one. Somebody else is asking in relationship with the mind, well, my perception is that I'd have more grace if I thought more immediately when I experienced life's irritations instead of leaning into the annoyance. What do you think? I'd have more grace if I thought more immediately when I experienced frustration instead of leaning into the annoyance. So maybe the person asking the question wants to clarify a bit.
Hey there, it's mine. Basically, I guess I used to feel that when I was at work, I was the calm one, working in advertising in New York and talking down the clients. But more in my personal life, when I feel like someone is insulting me, or, you know, I guess shrugging me off. I'm kind of on a roll, but I'll just say it, you know. I just say what I think. And that's also what I used to do before I had a job. And like I was paying them instead of them paying me. I just wish I could have better control over my reaction.
Well, I'd have to know an exact circumstance that you're talking about, because sometimes it's, you should say something, you know, sometimes the high road, we always think the high road is to keep our mouths shut. That's not the case. Sometimes the high road is to say something, you know, especially if somebody's abusing you. Or if somebody's acting like an ass. But then, of course, if you feel bad about it afterwards, then maybe they weren't acting like an ass, and maybe ass and you were projecting something onto them that they actually weren't doing or saying. And if so, that has something to do with core values. And that's a different conversation. You know, today's talk is about fear. And I think that what you're saying is that, I mean, I don't know, there's fear of saying something and feeling bad about it afterwards. And there's fear of not saying something and feeling bad about it afterwards. Just know that there's always going to be fear involved. And there's a potential, especially if you come in contact with somebody that's mistreating you or perceived mistreating you, may or may not be, that you want to take the right action in the moment. Like everybody wants to know the perfect thing to say in the moment, you know, so that that person can say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, right? Or you can get the response that you want. And the fear is there to help you make a smart decision. But if you, again and again and again, you're saying something and then you feel bad about yourself afterwards, then you might want to stop saying something. But then if you not say something and then you feel bad afterwards, you might want to start saying something. And it's just the dance, you know? Yeah.
Oh no, I know I need to say something, and it's actually about my husband, who I adore, but sometimes he can just be rude. He doesn't say things in the most diplomatic way, and I feel like there's no way I'm not saying something, but I just feel if I stepped back and did it in more of a, I don't know, turning it on its head way, a humorous way, it would make a better impact instead of us having a screaming fight about, and these are actually kind of trivial things like driving in LA.
Let me just stop you, because I already have enough information. We got to move on. Okay. Okay, integrity equals whatever you're feeling plus a drop of grace. The more you practice the four-step art of fear method, the more you're going to live in integrity around what you feel. And it's just going to be natural. Because you're staying in your own lane, you're dealing with your emotions. Like, he's really being an ass right now and I feel angry. So your anger is your own. right? And there's no integrity in not saying something if you're angry. You know, it's problem solving energy. But you're just going to say, you know, what you're going to say with a lot more grace if you practice the four-step art of fear method. You won't have to like force yourself to, you know, be funny or whatever. You'll just know what to say. It just makes you emotionally stable, the four-step art of fear method. So let's practice it. And hopefully that answered your question. Who's our volunteers, Amy? Who first?
We've got Mary and Tomas.
Okay, Mary, why don't we start with you?
Okay. I'm be a volunteer. Just kidding.
So we have two choices. We can either just deal with whatever emotional discomfort you have just organically that's there right now while we're sitting here, which is probably not going to be very elevated unless you're irritated with me, in which case, perfect. We'll explore that. Or we can pick a situation in your life where you felt emotionally really upset and we can recreate that moment. Which would you prefer?
I kind of live at a very high level of emotionally upset because of a 3-year divorce, custody, lost my kids a year and a half ago. So I'm always feeling horrible. So we can start there.
Okay. So I want you to first acknowledge in your own way, say it out loud, that it's normal and natural to feel what you're feeling because, and just see how you do. Start talking.
It's normal and natural to feel sick with worry as a mother when you never get to talk to your children. And I always feel sick with worry and sick in my stomach and my heart and a fuzz in my head because my ex is very aggressive and has been very successful in court.
Do you feel like when I hear the word sick with worry, I get concerned. Do you feel like your worry and your upset is out of proportion to your life situation, or do you think that it's about right?
It's about right.
Okay. Now, if it felt like it was more than your life situation warranted, then you can also in the first step say it's normal and natural for me to feel a exaggerated feeling of sickness and worry. Because I've been repressing and not dealing with my fear for so long. You know, that's another thing that you can add in the first step. So second step, let's just go with one emotion or one. It could be your mind. It could be an emotion, just anything. Because you really want to do them one at a time. You can put them all together and just maybe make a sound like, oh, I feel in step two, you know, and it's everywhere. Right. But the more you can just pinpoint, I mean, I just recently was in a float spa and I did fear, anger, and sadness in individual four steps. And it was really profound. So I actually am now leaning towards doing them one at a time. So pick one. And step two, identify what is it that you feel and where.
I feel sick in my stomach. And I just feel sick in my stomach.
Okay. Sick in your stomach, on a scale of 1 to 10, how strong is it?
I say 10, but it's not nausea. It's like just overwhelming heaviness and like
right.
Great sadness.
And the more you try to really hone in on what it is, the more you're in your head. And so we want to just kind of give a very simple exploration of like, I feel sick to my stomach and it's a level 10. So put your hands on your stomach. Now remember, suffering equals discomfort times resistance. That's the discomfort, level 10. Step three, are you in resistance to it? And resistance can show up in so many different ways. It could show up as trying to understand it, trying to ignore it, whatever, you know, are you in resistance to it?
It just feels tired. Like you're saying on the plane, when you're tired, like you don't want to feel this way. You don't want to deal with this.
Okay. So notice what you just said. I don't want to feel this way. I don't want to deal with this. How strong is your feeling of, I don't want to feel this way. I don't want to deal with this.
Super strong.
1 to 10.
Anything to get away from it. And when I do those things, then I have to.
So step three, I now want you to just close your eyes and in silence, just keep feeling and saying over and over again, I don't want to feel this way. I don't want to deal with this. I'm tired. I want to do anything to get rid of this. Just keep saying your sentence over and over again and just let it be. Just go all the way feeling this. And everybody, I don't want you to be a fly on the wall. I want you to be going through this process yourself because we're now going to be in silence for 1 minute. So just close your eyes and just resist it. Full free rein to resist, resist, resist. This is a way that we honor our resistance. 1 minute of silence. How is that for you?
I began to feel a little tired of resisting.
It's like, okay, the resistance requires so much effort. Oh my gosh. Right? Just think about somebody living with a snake and what it takes for them to just act like the snake's not there. It's like it can become their whole lives. Did it start to dissipate or like, did it shift? Did it shrink? Did it, you know, whatever else you want to tell me.
Literally, it got tiring to have to keep saying that, like, I'm so tired of this. Like, then I became tired of hearing myself say that.
Okay. Well, but here's the thing. I think what may be happening is that you did it intellectually, saying it over and over in your mind.
Okay.
All right. So this is great because that's not what you want to do because that's going to be really tiring. Like if, you know, if I were to just focus on my water bottle for 1 minute, I'd after a while I'd be like, okay, can I stop now? Like this is not about focusing or this is not a mental experience. This is a physical experience. This is about just emotionally connecting with your resistance. This is like when I was on the plane and saying, I'm just tired. I just allowed myself to feel tired. And it felt so good to not to pretend to be tired anymore, but to just allow myself to be tired and allow myself to be over it and allow myself to not want to feel this. And it's just, I cried. I felt very emotional. This is supposed to be, certainly step three and step four are very emotional experiences. And if you made them into a heady experience, it's going to be exhausting. You know, this is not about like, it's about, and we could do it again, but I think that the lesson is here and we can do it with the next person, but let's at least in step four, do that with the sickness in your stomach. Okay. Have an emotional experience with that. It is not about focusing on it. It is not about just repeating it over and over again. You know, like somebody reading poetry or reading something, or you know, it's about having a emotional connection with your resistance first, because you can't even get to the discomfort until you deal with the resistance, because it prevents you from getting there, and then an emotional connection with the discomfort itself. All right, so Dan, do you have a question?
No.
Okay. Does that make sense?
It does, but it may be more challenging for some of us than others.
It is definitely more challenging for some, because we're so in our heads, and our modern school system, you know, definitely keeps us in our heads. But if you've ever had, I mean, you have children, right? If you have ever held a baby and just really emotionally connected with that baby, or if you've ever had an upset dog that just really needs you and you've really emotionally connected with a dog, then you know how to do this. You do. You've been doing it your whole life. Like, you've been hugging people your whole life. You know, people, you have a girlfriend who's upset and you're like, let me just give you a hug. And it's like you have compassion for them and you can feel them and they can feel you. And it's like this beautiful experience. You know how to do this. Okay. All right. Step four. I now want you to put your hand on your stomach, stick to your stomach. And I want you to emotionally connect in whatever way that that works for you with your sick to your stomach. And everybody else do this too, you know, not with your sick to your stomach, but because that's not yours. You know, somebody else may be feeling tired, or somebody else may be in their heads, or somebody else may be feeling fear in their chest or what have you. So do your own version of this alongside us. But now you're going to connect with sick to your stomach and just allow yourself to feel sick to your stomach. Just have as much intimacy with that as you can. If you can love the sickness in your stomach, then you can learn how to love yourself. 1 minute of silence. If you have any questions for me, ask before you do it, but connect with this emotionally, this feeling. 1 minute. Okay, open your eyes. How was that for you?
I felt very irritated and angry and then thought maybe I needed more help.
Tell me about your process, because a lot of this is about troubleshooting.
No, I mean, I think the emotions that came up are irritated and angry, and I don't really feel like... You say, like, pay attention to your stomach, like, I always pay attention to my stomach.
Hold on. I didn't say pay attention to your stomach. What did I say?
I don't remember.
Okay. I said, have intimacy with your stomach. Paying attention is this, right? It's exhausting. It's like, what does this do? This is stupid, right? It's using your mind to pay attention. And I do understand that you've been in your head a lot, and more than likely you've been in your head a lot as a way to not have to feel your emotions. So it's going to take you more time to learn how to do this emotionally. And I know Tomas, who's our other volunteer, is also very heady, and I've been working with him, and he is really struggling to have an emotional connection with his emotions as well. So let's just maybe we'll come back to him in just a moment. Let me just troubleshoot a couple things here, because the four steps are a way to honor your fear. I'm going to say that again. It is not a way to focus on your fear. It is not a way to understand something better. It's a way to honor your fear. You know, it's a way to bow to it. It's a way to love it. It's a way to connect with it. It's a way to have intimacy with it. You know, and it's kind of like you have to crawl before you can walk, before you can run. Like, even if you have 0.00001% more ability to feel your fear by doing this, you know, once, or even if you intellectually understand, like, oh, wait, no, I'm not supposed to be thinking about it or resisting it. I'm supposed to be actually connecting with it. You know, that makes a huge difference. This is what chaos theory shows us. Like, if you look at a gigantic mathematical equation, you know, on a chalkboard in the lower right-hand corner equals you, if you change a number in there from zero, I have zero interest whatsoever of ever having anything to do with this motherfucker that lives in my fucking stomach, right? No freaking way. I just want to get rid of it. Just show me tips on how to get rid of it. Zero, right? Mm-hmm. Excuse my language. To like, oh, 0.001, like, okay, wait, I'm not supposed to be talking like that. I'm actually supposed to be a little bit more inclusive. Okay, I know that ultimately the goal is to get intimate, but I just have to crawl before I can walk. Like, even if you change your perspective a little bit from this call, and that number changes from a zero to 0.00001% more willing to feel it, that radically changes the outcome. And each time you do the four-step art of fear method, that number changes more and more and more and more. And this is how little changes can result in big changes. So the four steps are a way to honor your fear. I'm going to say that again. Now, the four steps doesn't make it go away, you know, especially if you're living in a really scary, hostile situation where your life is upside down. I mean, when I was going through my divorce, it was awful, awful, awful. But it does calm it down to natural levels. I mean, my life wasn't it. You know, threat. I wasn't homeless. I wasn't, you know, like there, I had other things that were okay. You know, it just calms it down to natural levels. And when you do these four steps, you should feel immediately better.
I would say I felt worse, to be honest.
Right. And if you
feel worse, I was just feeling the resistance.
Right. If you feel worse, it's because you're feeling the resistance. And I'm going to go through four things that can possibly make you feel worse, right? These four steps should make you feel immediately better. You know, once you have done the four steps, you should feel like your resistance, which I have asked 1,000 people, the resistance to the emotion feels way worse than the fear itself. It's unanimous. I mean, for some people, they don't even get past the third step for months. And I think that's going to be the case with you. You've got to spend some time just honoring your resistance because it's so strong. It does not. It has worked so hard for decades, maybe even, to prevent you from having to deal with that awful feeling in your stomach. And, you know, you can't even get to the awful feeling in your stomach until you, you know, have the resistance feel loved and honored and respected as well. So if it's done right, and you'll know it when you feel it. But even like I said, little increment crawl before you can walk really does make a difference slowly. But it should dissipate to natural levels. And then in step four, so will your fear. And over time, then your fear and anxiety in general will come down to natural levels. Now, again, it will never go away completely, but it will go down to being in proportion to your life experience. And that may be what's going on with you too. It's like you just have so much fear right now. And it's fighting for its right to party, you know? You know, pity party, there's a party, the word party is there for a reason, right? And you said so yourself, it's at normal levels for what you're going through, and that could have something to do with it. But if that's not happening with the four steps, there are four possible reasons why. And we're going to go through these so we can troubleshoot before we get to Tamas. Now, the first three ways in which the four-step art of fear may not give you the relief that you seek, is tied into the analogy of like, however old you are, like I'm 55 years old. It's like I've put a dollar a day into a jar of money, and I'm very invested in who I am. Like, this is my investment in myself. And doing the four-step art of fear method starts with asking us to throw away that investment and trying something completely new. Like, we are so invested in dealing with our emotions in a certain way. We've put a dollar a day into a jar, you know, and invested in that way of being regarding our emotions, that it's just hard to give up that investment. Now, the first way in which this won't work, this couldn't work, or that you, you know, need a little extra help, is you are doing the four steps not as a way to honor fear, but as a way to get it to go away. So that's your investment. You know, I'm so invested in doing whatever work I can. First, I was trying to fight it and conquer it, and, you know, and that didn't work. So then I'm on the call with Kristen, and that this will help me get it to go away, right? That's your investment. That's your way of being. That's your way of looking at it. It's like, it's so hard to get our heads out of that. And, you know, fear is too smart for that. It only aggravates it further. So the tip would be, if you're doing this as a way to get rid of your fear or to calm it down, which I think that you probably were, because you're like, it's still there, right? Well, yeah, it's still there. You're going through hell right now. Really go inside and see, though, if this is true. Have you signed up for these sessions? Are you honoring fear? Or did you do this practice and put yourself in the hot seat because you're trying to feel better? And only because you're trying to feel better? And I mean, I get it. Of course you are. We're Americans. Like, we don't do things unless we think that there's going to be something in it for us. But just know that that is going to work not in your favor, because that habitual investment in just doing this to try to get rid of fear. And now if fear is a roommate or a snake, it's like, all right, I've been trying to get rid of you through this way, but now I'm going to try to get rid of you by honoring you. You know, they're too smart for that. You've got to change your thinking. You've got to start seeing this as a self-love practice, as a discomfort-loving practice. That's the tip there. The second reason why you might have troubles is that you're so invested, you know, that jar of money, in focusing on it and using your mind and having an intellectual experience with it. Tomas, I know, you know, I'm talking to you, right? And this is your way of being. This is your investment. And I see that with a lot of people. And what this four-step art of fear method is trying to accomplish is getting people out of their heads and into their bodies, and having an emotional connection with their discomfort. So if you're having an intellectual experience during the four steps, unfortunately, that is another form of resistance to feeling it. So we all know what happens next when you're in resistance. So just know that. And here's a Zen parable that would help you gain perspective. And this Zen parable, I'm going to first tell you the Zen parable the way that it was originally taught to me. It's regarding the mind. And I'm putting that in there just because we came up with the mind. And then I'm going to modify it to accommodate fear. So the student came to the teacher and said, I've been working on myself for decades and I still suffer horribly. My mind is still not at rest. Can you help me put my mind at rest? And the teacher said, well, show me your mind and I will put it at rest. So 10 days, the student sat in the sun, in the rain, and he meditated, and he spent so much time trying to grasp his mind. And finally, he went to the teacher and said, it is ungraspable. This is what he finally said. And then the teacher said, okay, then I have put your mind at rest. Now I'm going to say the same parable regarding fear as a modification, because it's similar. Student came to the teacher and said, I've been working, and really, when I'm telling you this story, really let it go in. Like, imagine yourself as that student. So student came to the teacher and said, I've been working on myself for decades and I still suffer horribly. My fear is still not at rest. Can you help me put my fear at rest? And the teacher said, well, show me your fear and I will put it at rest. 10 days, the student sat in the sun and the rain and meditated, trying to grasp his fear, trying to grasp it. And finally, he returned to the teacher and said, it's ungraspable. And the teacher said, okay, then I have put your fear at rest. So the moral of the story, fear will only rest once you stop getting out of your head, once you stop trying to figure it out, once you stop trying to understand anything, and you start just to have an emotional connection with it, which is very, it's you can't figure out fear. You can't figure out the snake. And the snake's just going to be the snake no matter what you figure out. So just have an emotional connection with it, and your life is just going to be a lot easier. Any questions about the two first troubleshooting? And we're obviously going to go a little over. Hope that's okay. Any questions about anything I've explored of the first two possible reasons why people might struggle with the Art of Fear method?
Well, somebody's asking, when you're imploring connection and intimacy with our emotions, she's saying, I just don't see how to love the unpleasantness. And it's very conceptual to say have intimacy or have an emotional connection. I don't know what that really means.
Well, have who's asking the question?
Amy. Amy, and you're welcome to unmute and clarify if you'd like.
It's the hardest thing in the world to do, especially because the uncomfortable feeling, we blame it for torturing our lives, and we don't realize that we should blame ourselves bear with me here, because this is going to be offensive until you realize what I'm saying. These calls are for people that have worked with me before, and so I think that a lot of people are very, very new to the concepts that I'm presenting, because we have new people on the call. So I'm going to go back to the very, very basics. Fear, I want you to see it as a person who lives in your body. And it is a person that is with you from birth till death. You are never going to get rid of this person. It is always going to be a part of your life. And it's normal and natural to have this person in your life. And it's with you pretty much every single moment of every single day, in every single interaction you have, no exceptions. Now, with that being your life that most people are in denial of, it becomes very, very important how you treat this person. And because of our modern school system always having us be in our heads, we're no longer connecting with our emotions emotionally. We're dealing with them intellectually. We're taught trying to control them. You know, emotional intelligence is seen as our ability to understand, for example, our fear and control it. And so at this point, fear is now retaliating and acting like a crazy person. And we're like, that guy is an asshole and we need to get rid of him. And maybe Kristen can give me new pointers to help me get rid of them. And I'm saying, not only can you not get rid of them, but you're never going to be able to understand them. You're never going to be able to control them. The only thing that you can learn how to do that's ever going to give you the life that you want to live is to learn how to make friends with them and learn how to honor them and bow to them. Not as like, oh, there's nothing else I can do and I hate this, but when you do this, though, when you learn how to have a healthy, loving, flowing relationship with fear, fear calms right down and its true nature comes out, which is that fear, at this point, the only version that we know of fear, it's retaliating, angry, fighting back version, because we have, as a society, declared a unanimous war against it, and it's left it no choice but to fight back and turn up the dial and act crazy. We did this. You did this. You have unfortunately bought into some sort of misguided effort to try to get rid of something that is such an innate part of our lives that now the only version that we know of fear is this crazy one. And for you to say, for me to come along and say, oh no, you need to turn towards it and give it some love. It's like, the hell no, that son of a bitch, he's the problem, not me. But what I'm saying is that you're the problem, and that you've bought into this war against it that has left fear no choice but to retaliate. And so because you picked the war with fear, it is also your responsibility now to end the war. And the four-step art of fear method will help you do that one moment at a time. So yes, it's hard. Yes, this guy's the problem, that you've been thinking that forever. You're very invested. You have a dollar a day, your entire life invested into that belief. And I'm asking you to throw away that investment and try something new. You don't have to. You can go back to fighting a war against him, but we know how that goes. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. We are not winning the war against fear. It is time for us to learn how to make friends with it. And that's what the four-step art of fear is here to accomplish. It's hard though, but the first step starts with you. Anything worth doing. And I will say one more thing. Making friends with fear is a heck of a lot easier. And learning how to feel your fear is a heck of a lot easier than continuing to fight the soul-sucking war that we have against it that isn't working for anyone. It's very hard to fight a war against fear. It's also hard to make friends with fear, but not as hard. Any other questions? Unfortunately, Tomas, we're not going to get to you. Maybe we'll all do it together at the end, though.
There is one more question, then, if you're open for one more. If you start to overthink being intimate with your fear, does focusing on your breathing help?
No, because you're still focusing. Whenever you say the word focusing, we're right back to the head. This is a different experience. So I want everybody to do this right now. Love. I want you to focus on love right now, just for 5 seconds. Focus on love. Have that experience. And now I want you to shift and try to understand love and have that experience. Now, if I asked you to focus on love for a minute, you'd be exhausted. If I asked you to understand love, you'd have a million questions, and you'd probably send them to me in an email, and I'd, you know, so that's another experience. And now I want you to accept love into your life or into your heart. And notice that we're kind of bridging the gap between, you know, accept, oh, well, what does that mean, right? And then you're kind of stepping into your body, because I mentioned love and heart and all that. And now I want you to embrace love. Now I want you to give love a chance to speak. Now I want you to love your love. Now I want you to feel love. And just notice how simple things just got. Now I want you to, like, I'm going to take you out of it. Focus on your breathing. Well, that takes you right out of love. Because you're back in your head and you're focusing on, like, wait, what? Right? So let's go back to feeling love. So we've shifted from focusing on love, which is an intellectual mental experience, to feeling love. And now I want you to be love, where there's no separation between you and it. So that's what I'm talking about. Now imagine if we go through the same direction, or go through the same voice, as I call them, and a lot of you don't know what that means, with fear. This is never about focusing. if you ever have a question, should I ask, you know, I got to ask Kristen, is this about focusing? No. The second we say the word focus, we're back on the mind. This is about having a emotional experience or a physical experience with love, or in this case, fear. Emotions are meant to be felt. All right, I'm going to go through the last two troubleshooting parts of our evening because we've gone over. And then I'll open it up for just questions, and you guys can take off if you want from here, because I know we've gone over. So you will have a chance to ask more questions, but I'm sorry, Tomas, we're not going to do the four steps again, because I think that we needed to cover a lot of real estate here. But the third troubleshooting, if the four-step art of fear isn't working for you, is that you're getting some sort of unconscious payoff for keeping your anxiety around. And there could be an investment that you have then with being anxious, or like the investment that you have of being like, oh my gosh, I have worked my ass off to not have to deal with that sick feeling in my stomach. And how I've dealt with it is by being in my head, and I don't want to give up the progress I think I've made by not dealing with it by being in my head. Or you may be addicted to the drama of the anxiety. Or I know during my marriage, by keeping the anxiety around, it kept me connected to my husband and still in a relationship with him, even though he wasn't around. Like, there may be some reason why you are sabotaging the Art of Fear method, because you don't want to actually get rid of your anxiety because you're getting some payoff for keeping it around. Now, I'm sure you have a million questions about that. If you are familiar with my products online, I have this product called the list of payoffs. I've identified 43 different payoffs for keeping your anxiety around. And then the fourth reason why you may struggle with the Art of Fear method is because we all do this because we want to feel better, right? But what happens sometimes is once you take fear out of the basement and allow it a chance to speak, you know, speak is the word, it's not the right word, but emote or do its thing, it oftentimes has a lot to say. Like, if you've been, well, a lot of people that I work with report feeling a lot more fear or anxiety because for decades they've been resisting or fighting it. And now that it's out of the basement, it takes time for the fear to express itself. Now, if this is the case, and it happened with me, you know, I was notorious for ignoring fear. And once I started on this practice, I felt social anxiety for about 6 months. And it was kind of disorienting. I'm like, wait a second, what's going on here? But if this is the case, you know, this is the thing that's going to take you to the next level of your development. You must go into the darkness sometimes in order to get through to the other side where there's a lot more light. It's important then to just do the four-step Art of Fear method more often and longer and in an honorable way. It's kind of like with any person that you haven't been getting along with for a really long time, or you've been ignoring for a long time, they might have a lot to say, and you got to just let them say it without trying to rush them until they're done. You know, and the key is to spend more time probably in step three, and then definitely in step four, and make this a longer process. Or practice, you know, and do it until you feel like it's starting to dissipate, which is what happened with my social anxiety. And then I had this thing that I was compensating for and being very masculine about, and you know, it just changed the way I walked and talked because I was not dealing with my social anxiety from childhood. I finally, as an adult, in 6 months, had gave it its chance to speak and say all that it needed to say, and now it's let go of me. And how will you know if you're getting it right? You'll know. It's as obvious as night and day. Before I give you an analogy on this that is a really fun analogy, and then open the floor to questions, I just want to quickly say that next month's call is on the 15th of February. It is not on the 8th. It's because I have a ski camp the evening of the 8th. So we're going to do it on the third Tuesday of the month, which is on the 15th. And we'll send out a reminder. But how will you know, back to this, the analogy, can't believe I'm going to use this one, but how will you know if you're getting the four-step art of fear method, right? You know, I was talking to a friend of mine, a male friend of mine, and when he was a little kid, he used to masturbate in the shower, but he didn't really know what masturbation was. And he would use shampoo or soap or conditioner, and it felt really good. And he's like, oh yeah, that's an orgasm. I just had an orgasm. And he'd look down at the conditioner and be like, yep, there it is, right? And it wasn't until he actually had an orgasm, like a for real orgasm, that he realized, oh no, that wasn't an orgasm. This is an orgasm, right? Like, you know it when you do this right. Now, intimacy with your fear ain't no orgasm, right? But when you get these four steps right, especially at night when you're trying to sleep, like, you will know it. You will feel it. And so I'm bowing to you. Thank you. This is, we've covered a lot of ground, introducing a lot of new people. I'll stay on as long as people have questions. And let's keep recording, Amy, so that people's questions are part of the recording, so that people that couldn't make the call tonight live will get to experience the questions as well.
You can just unmute if you have a question. Sounds like we may not have any questions. We've got a couple of comments. One is, I'm so thankful for your continued yes to your values, Kristen. And another is saying, thanks, Kristen. I found this helpful looking at the fundamental stuff today. It helps to cement it in. And lots of thank you. So it's last call. If anybody has a question, a burning conundrum that you need a Zen parable to help you resolve.
I will say this is not for everyone. This is for people that are done trying to fight a war with their emotions and are ready to try something new. You're not going to find this information anywhere else besides here. So thank you for being here. And you are some very proud warriors that are among the first in the world that are trying a new approach to your emotions that has never been considered before. And I know it's scary, and I know it is counterintuitive, and I know you're really invested in a certain way of being, and you're invested in, you know, in fighting whatever wars you've won with your fear, and you don't want to give up that investment that you think you've made. And, you know, if you feel like, oh my gosh, this is what I've been doing is not working, then you come to the right place, and we're going to try something new. It is extremely counterintuitive, but I have never seen it not work. And I will say that the journey from your head to your heart, to your soul, you know, the journey from focusing to acceptance, to embracing, to loving, to intimacy, you know, is a very daring journey and fraught with peril and difficult to make. But it's one of the most magnificent journeys we can go on. And I think that connecting with your emotions, and in particular connecting with your fear, if you can learn how to do that, everything else comes easier after that. Everything in your life becomes easy. So thank you.
Thank you. A few more comments. Thank you so much, Kristen. Great session. Super helpful explanation of something hard to explain. Bill says, get well soon, and has some plant medicine suggestions for you for while you're in Peru. Michael says, we're all in good hands. Thanks to you, Kristen, and thank you for working with COVID. We love you. Thank you.
Is there time for one question?
Absolutely.
Awesome. So this is Jacqueline here. Nice to meet you. Thank you so much. I loved your book, which is why I signed up for these monthly calls. The question I have is, it really, like, when it comes to fear, for me, it's like, at the end of the day, I'm a badass. Like, I have a PhD, I'm training for pole vault, but I'm only scared in pole vault. And I don't understand, like, I can address it, I can be friends with it in any other scary situation, but then I just get so mad during training when I can't do something, or if I can't do something, or if I can't listen to it, right? Like, why can't I be friends with it? Like, why can't I, like, it's just going back to that four-step method. But when I try, like, I contain the emotions, and I know I need to let them out, but you're in a training professional atmosphere, and I can't let out the emotions because then I look weak. I don't know if anything of what I'm saying makes sense, but I just wanted to talk it out and ask, like, what right. I could do.
Oftentimes, when somebody's not dealing with their fear in other parts of their life, it'll show up redirected in another part. Like, a classic example of this is, I worked with a woman who was a badass, a surgeon in New York City, and she was in a man's world, and she was just fearless. She was a ball buster, you know, she was badass. And then she would go skiing, and she was an incredible skier, but she was just pickled in fear, and it didn't seem rational. She didn't realize that who she had to become in her work was affecting, you know, like, because she wasn't dealing with her fear there, she was feeling it triply when she was skiing. And so it's possible, and I'm not saying this is the case, because I don't know, that there's some other area of your life where you have fear or discomfort, we'll just call it, that because you won't deal with it anywhere else, and somehow fear has found out that the only way that it can get your attention is when you're pole vaulting, and that's, you know, it might be showing up exaggerated there. Does that feel like it might be the case?
Yeah, it was. It was the case the first time around, and now that I feel like I've been successful, it's coming around again. Like, the fear is trying to talk again, and I'm like, okay, here we go. But I didn't want to do what I did last time, which is why I'm like, what else do I need to learn? What other resources am I not seeing? What other picture? And that's a good point.
So then the solution would be to start doing the four steps. And like I said, you'll know it when you feel it. It won't feel like an orgasm, but you'll know when you feel it, when it's like, oh yeah, that's it. That's what she's talking about. Practice this. And it has to be a physical experience. And it cannot be intellectual, it has to be physical. There has to be an emotional connection, not only with your resistance, but also the discomfort itself. And once we start breaking it down, like, can we do this with love? Yeah, you know, it's easy to feel love, you know, not for everybody, but for most people. Well, it's the same thing with fear. It's easy to feel fear once you actually learn how to do that and exercise those muscles. Is it easy, you know, can you connect with the dog? I love that analogy. If you've ever connected with a dog emotionally, you know, do the same thing with your own stomach or your own chest, but do it before you go pole vaulting. Do it, you know, in the week leading up to a meet, do it in the morning, do it when you're at school, do it, you know, whenever you feel uncomfortable. And even if it has nothing to do with pole vaulting, if you learn how to be in flow with your fear in the rest of your life, then it's not going to try and hijack your days when you're pole vaulting. And even if it does, it just means that it still has a lot to say.
Yeah.
So just find a private spot and just do your best.
Okay. I'll start there. Thank you.
Okay. Nobody ever said this is going to be easy, but it's a lot easier. Less difficult than, like I said, fighting a war with fear. And you know, if you do this, you'll have a different future. Not just with pole vaulting, but in other areas of your life as well. Let me know how it goes.
I will. Thank you.
And last thing, because you're on the calls now, keep working on this and submit questions as they come up for our calls.
Okay, I can do that.
Okay.
Thanks.
Anybody else? Okay, then. I'll see you guys next month on the 15th, not the 8th, on the 15th. And thank you. I was long-winded tonight. It must be the fever. I got the fever for teaching about beer. All right, bye, everyone.